Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 22 of Game On with Cody and John.
On this episode's big deal,
Battle Royale.
We'll take a look at games for five or more players.
And on this episode's Buy a Try or Deny,
Space Alert.
Should you put up your shields or open your docking bay for this game?
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all kinds of tabletop games, board games, card games, and role-playing games. Coming to you from the gaming capital of the world, beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana.
Rainy and Indianapolis, Indiana.
It's been raining for weeks.
I don't mind it, but...
No, I know you said you liked that, but...
It's getting kind of soggy here.
I guess you could say it's good gaming weather, because you got to be inside anyway.
Perfect.
So might as well play some games. So, Cody, what's been going on with you lately?
Not much. Getting the final wedding and honeymoon preparations nailed down. I think it's about 3 months now.
So. Oh, I know. I finally got my tux fitted.
Just you're so good.
You know, and my son's going to be the ring bearer in the wedding, so he got his little tux fitted too. So
cute.
He's gonna look sharp.
Indeed.
But we got some great things to talk about today. What we want to kind of start off talking about is the fact that we've got some changes. Changes are good.
Changes.
Turn and face the brave changes.
I will.
That threw me off. Right? Ah. I wasn't expecting a response there. The changes we want to talk to you about are some changes in our bumpers on our website. Those are the things right between the segments. So we've kind of revamped all of those. And you'll also notice some changes to our website. Big changes. We'll get into that in our next segment.
Okay.
But,
hey.
Okay. Yeah, you know.
I'm very excited.
Me too. It's a good time for Game On with Cody and John. We're happy to be podcasting. In our big deal segment today, we're going to be talking about games for five or more players. We've entitled it
Battle Royale.
And so we're going to be talking about the games that if you have a big group of people, things that you can pull out. And we're not even going to limit it to party games. I know you're probably thinking party games, but we're going to go a little bit beyond that.
We are one step ahead of you, dear listener.
That's right. And what do we have going on in our Buy a Try or Deny, Cody?
Well, we're trying the new hotness, Space Alert, which you may have heard us talk about on the other side of the pond, but it's finally come here to the States, and Game On, we get on it.
Many thanks to Rio Grande Games for bringing that to the United States. Not personally to us. I still had to buy it. But
and Rio Grande Games.
And Rio Grande. But this is going to be a real interesting one. So if you've heard about this game and you've heard the buzz on it, be sure to listen to our Buy a Try or Deny segment and decide for yourself.
Definitely a genre-making game for good or for worse.
Yep. But as always, our podcast starts off with the Game On Inbox, which starts...
now. The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it.
Well, welcome to the Game On Inbox, your source for all gaming news and information. We're going to start off, as always, with games that we've been playing, and I'll go and kick it to Cody. Cody, what have we been playing recently?
Well, John and I played Small World with some other folks at a, strange enough, a gaming memorial.
Yeah.
If you remember our last episode, we dedicated it to a friend of the show and a friend of ours, Tad Davis, who recently passed away. And they organized some of his really close friends and family organized a kind of a big gaming day.
It's almost kind of like a wake, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, really, if you think about it. And mm-hmm. it was held at the, if you're familiar with Indianapolis, the Ram restaurant and brewery downtown. And we had the whole back room and we just ate, drank, and played a lot of games.
Yep, had a real nice table set up with mm-hmm. Some items of Tad's and some things to remember him and a guest book to sign. So we all had a great time doing what Tad loved to do, and I'm sure that that's what he would have wanted us to do is to play some games and have a good time together. So yeah, we had a chance to play Small World, this time the 4-player version.
We're working our way up.
I know, we played it 2, 3, and 4 players now.
At Origins, I think, we'll find someone.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So we'll find, if you're out there, you're going to Origins, look us up, and we'll tell you how a little later, but ooh,
ooh,
that's
man,
a teaser
that's
in the biz.
Good radio tease there, kid. So what was your opinion of 4-player Small World?
Oh, I liked it, and... We found out we'd been playing, I don't want to say we'd been playing a rule wrong, we've been kind of handicapping ourselves maybe a little bit as far as like the allocation of armies and
yeah, I
and
think
conquering.
We didn't have a real great understanding, even though the rules of this game are not that complicated, but we're not very smart. So, no. But how you after you've conquered certain areas, you know, the fact that you you can't reconquer an area with something that you've already used, and then at the beginning of your next turn, you have to kind of pick up all of your mm-hmm. excess tokens. So, yep. Once we figured that out, the game was once again a breeze.
Right, but I really liked this game. This game's stock is rising, I think, and I think it's something I'm going to add to my collection. I know John buys everything for the show, just because he is a bigger game library than I do. But I think this one is definitely going to be a pickup, and I'm starting to see the merits of a two-player game more when I see it with more, if that makes any sense, because sure. It's like, well, I can play this with four or five, but, you know, this could really work with two, and this could be, you know, an hour game and a lot of fun, so.
Yeah, and that's high praise for you because you lost.
Oh, I lost bad.
You were like last place, I think, right?
Last place by at least 25 points. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I got trounced.
But so the fact that you're able to still say you
like
it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
I'm not exactly that guy.
Well, you're not always
all the
that
time.
Guy. You're occasionally that guy.
it was a bad gaming 2 weeks for me.
Really?
Well, I mean, we'll talk about some of the other games we played, but I did not do well.
Not much winning
no,
going on. Yeah.
No. And speaking of a game I didn't do well at for other reasons, we played another game from our pile. What did we play, John?
Well, yes, we had an opportunity to play in a game day with our friend Single L.
Yeah, I can't do it.
no one can do the Single L intro music like Single L. But we had an opportunity to play this new game from Bucephalus Games called Roman Taxi. And let me just tell you a little bit about this game. Well, you know what? Rather than tell you about it, I think it's just about time for another game on...
It's time for a Game On bonus review.
Bonus review.
Bonus review.
Bonus review.
Ah!
Did that surprise you?
Ooh! All right, I'm not prepared for this.
Okay, well, as usual, I am.
Wow.
I'm so awesome.
I made the logo, so.
You did indeed.
I did my part.
All right, well, Roman Taxi is a game from Bucephalus Games. It came out this year. It's for 2 to 4 players and plays in about... Gosh, hard to say. I mean, I think they said it takes about 45 to 60 minutes. I think a 4-player game of this could end up taking about 9.5 hours.
Yeah, give or take.
Yeah. But, well, and you'll see why in a little bit. But the theme of this game is that you are a taxi driver in ancient Rome. And so the board pretty much represents this very cartoony version of ancient Rome with all of these streets, and you're, I guess, riding your chariot around. And you're going to be picking up these passengers. There's cards that represent the passengers, and each card is going to tell you where their starting location is, and these are all buildings that have letters that indicate where they are, which building they start in, and then where they want to go. And then it'll also tell you a time value and a fare. So the goal in the game is for you to get your passenger from point A, well, I won't say necessarily point A, but one of the buildings is called Building A, but from their starting location to their final destination in a certain amount of time. If you're able to get them in that destination in the allotted time, then you're going to get the full fare. If you take up to double that amount of time, then you're going to get just half of the fare. And the fare is in an arbitrary number. It's basically victory points. It's money, victory points, whatever. That's how you keep your points for the game. So if it's between the time and double the time, then you're going to get half the value. If you ever go over double the amount of time, then the passenger is going to get mad and get out of your car, and then you won't have any points for that one at all, and you'll have to go pick up another passenger. So the mechanic for the movement in this game, because it's all about moving, is one that you might recognize if you have any children or if you ever were a child. And
if you ever were a child?
That was supposed to be a little humorous.
No, yeah. It was very little.
Okay. And I've ever played the game Candyland. And if you may remember from the game Candyland, the way you move in that game is that you turn over a card very randomly, and it has a color on it.
Or two.
Or possibly two colors.
Ooh.
And you will move your piece to the next space of that color. That's exactly how this works here. These streets that are on this game have all different kinds of colors, I think 4 colors, and some spaces are white, just as sort of fillers. And so if you're on one space and you get a red card, you're going to move to the next red space. And you kind of have to keep to very typical American driving rules. And you have to stay on the right side of the road, and you can't cross over to the left.
They do that in other countries too, you know.
Well, no, I know, but the game was designed by Americans, so I figured that's what
they
were going with.
USA.
Not
USA.
It's not the British system.
It's almost 4th of July, so.
That's right, yeah.
Get out those flags.
So you can't do things like make U-turns in the middle of a street. You have to actually make a U-turn in an intersection.
I make U-turns in the middle of the street.
Well, that's the Roman Taxi is not the game for you. Yeah. And so the way you're going to get these cards is there's like a secondary board that has a grid of 9 cards that you're going to deal out in these different columns. And the cards are just, you know, just have the whole color. The whole card is that particular color. And so you're going to get to choose these cards on your turn. Sort of the way the mechanic will work is that after you have picked the last card that's in a column, then you're also going to take a card that's right above that in the column called an event card. And that event card might do any number of things. You might get you extra money for your passenger. It might kind of screw your neighbor and cause something bad to happen to them. Have them make them discard a passenger or whatever. And then after you've taken that card, then you're going to deal 3 cards back out to that that column. So the game kind of continues in this way. You're going to pick up your passengers, drop them off, and then once you drop them off, there's a stack of passenger cards and you're going to take another one of those and go and find another passenger and then pick that one up. And the game just kind of continues like this.
Ad nauseum.
You keep going until the stack of passenger cards runs out. And I believe that it's 10 passenger cards per player. So if you're playing in a 2-player game, that's 20 passenger cards you have to get through. And there's always 5 of them face up on the board, and their little tokens are in their starting location, so you kind of know where you want to go next. So that's the basics of the game, and Cody, what did you think of this game?
I think Carcassonne has a challenger coming up, because I hated this game.
Oh my.
If there's a deny minus, I would give it that. I think the concept is one that could be really neat. You know, it's like, you know, the Roman tax. I'd be like, oh, that's neat. You know, neat theme.
Artwork wasn't terrible. I mean,
no.
It's cartoony, kind of neat.
Yeah, it was fine. It's just this Candyland mechanic and just this really repetitive gameplay. It just goes nowhere. And the fact that the rules as written, this game would take you at least an hour to play, I think, even with like 2.
Yeah.
I think you'd be hitting close to an hour.
And we can't really say for sure, because we'll be perfectly honest, we didn't get through a full game.
No, I mean, it was just where all the 3 of us kind of looked at each other and we just shook our heads.
Yeah, we get the idea, yeah. And I sort of feel the same way about the game, but I probably have a slightly higher opinion of it just because I had an opportunity to play this with my son, who's 6, and it actually ended up being a pretty good game for him to understand the concept of. In the same way Candyland helps you understand the concept, it's a little more complex to figure out where you want to go, to plan out your route, and to pick the cards that you need to be able to get there. So for that, it was pretty fun. I think he had a good time with the game, and like most kids' games, I tolerated it because he's my son, and I like playing games with him.
So they should just repackage it and remarket it as a kids' game.
Yeah, because I think that they say the age is 8 and up, which I think it's fine for probably kids a little bit smaller than that. They can sort of figure out the. I had to give them a little bit of driving directions, right. But one other thing to note is that the production values on most Bucephalus games are actually pretty good as far as really nice quality boards and cards and good artwork sometimes.
Good enough.
But for this one, the tokens that they used to keep track of the score and really the taxi tokens, which are these wooden weird...
Like prism type.
Yeah, like kind of pyramid things, were too big. They were too big to fit on the squares. And so therefore it was very awkward and just seemed like that wasn't a very good design element there. So
it seems kind of hastily put together.
Yeah. So Cody gives this one a
deny minus.
Deny minus. I'm probably teetering between deny and try, just because I did have a good time playing this with my son. But I think there are other better games out there that would teach that kind of a mechanic to a child. So not exactly a glowing bonus review.
You got to ease your way back into them.
Exactly. Yeah. You know. And so hey, you know, every game that we give a deny to, hopefully the next one will be a little bit better. Got to keep that optimistic spirit there.
Tomorrow is another day.
That's right. All right. Well, to cleanse our palate a bit from that,
to calm down a little bit
from that bonus review. We want to talk about another game that we played with Single L, and that is the World of Warcraft trading card game.
Not exactly a new one.
No, no. It's been around for 2 or 3 years now. And we actually got starter packs for this, or starter sets,
yeah,
at Gen Con 2 years ago. That was part of the swag bag you got at Gen Con.
It's pretty nice.
Probably the best swag bag in recent memory.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
From Gen Con. And, you know, it comes in this real nice plastic box, and it's got a deck and two booster packs in it. And those things have been sitting. I had one of those from my swag bag, and then I was able to get a couple of extra swag bags just from some Gen Con contacts and so forth. So I had three of these starter sets literally just sitting on a shelf for 2 years.
I think I flipped through mine once.
Yeah, I think really I opened up one.
Look at it.
Right. And so I've been a Magic player for many years, and so I figured, I play Magic. I don't need to play another card game. But since Single L is such a big Magic fan, I figured I would try to sort of wean him off of that and give him, you know, a taste of something different. So we cracked these open, and Cody as well, and played a three-player game of WoW, and...
Wow, that was good. You didn't even try for that.
I didn't. I was really impressed with the game.
It's a good game.
I think it's really well designed, and we even had just, you know, the common and uncommon cards that are in the starter pack, so we didn't even get to see any of the super mega awesome rare cards. But I really like the way it plays. Of course, you can tell that it's designed after Magic, like most collectible card games are, with the idea being, instead of being a player or who's a wizard, which is kind of how Magic is set up, you have a hero that you're putting forth, and that hero can surround themselves with allies and different kinds of
items
and, like, and you can actually equip that hero with items and armor, and the hero himself or herself can attack during a turn. But one of the things that impressed me the most was, I think, well, one of the things that I really irritates me about Magic sometimes is I'm always building decks where I can't ever get enough mana. Like or I get too much. It's one or the other. And a matter of fact, I played Magic at lunch today and I couldn't get any mana. So, it's just a pain in the butt. And the WoW TCG has really fixed this mechanic by using the concept of resources. And resources can be any card in your deck, anything that's in your hand. You just play it face down instead of face up.
I love that. And it's still a one per turn.
Right.
So, you know, it doesn't get crazy. But, I mean, that's such a good idea if you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like now you don't have a 30-er deck that is pretty much just cards with one use, you know, for mana to put out things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you start getting duplicates of things, instead of just, you know, having them take up space or whatever, you can use them as the fuel. And I think that's just remarkable to me. It seems like this is the next... the next natural step in the Magic kind of mechanic.
And I think it also creates some interesting decisions, because if you have all really good cards in your hand that you want to play, now you got to make the decision of, in order to get some of those cards out, I have to sacrifice and use some of them for resources.
Right.
So that's great. Also like the fact that all of the allies and the heroes have a certain number of hit points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those who play Magic, the Magic creatures have like a power and a toughness. And at the end of a particular round of combat, it's not like if they survive, then they don't lose any life. And they just kind of
They always heal back up.
Always heal back up, yeah. Whereas in this game, the damage sticks. Mm-hmm. And so if you have an ally with 5 damage and you deal 3, it's then you know, it's got 2 left. And when it's gone,
the game's definitely has more of a tactical edge than Magic. Because, you know, Magic, I think, is a lot more about putting out the combos. And while you certainly can do that in WoW, I think... You know, you had this tactical element. You're like, oh, that ally's only got, you know, 2 health left. And it's like, you know, where should I focus my attack, on the hero or his allies? Or,
right.
I think there's a lot more strategy in this one than Magic.
Right. Now, for you board gamers and role players out there.
Stay with us.
Who aren't, when you hear the word collectible or tradable, you run screaming into the hills. You know, we're not trying to evangelize you into another sort of collectible game. And, you know, Cody and I have talked about it, that we're of the ilk that... This would be a kind of game we could really get into, I think, and start buying a bunch of cards for. So it does have that element to it. But, you know, just having those starter packs was still a very good and enjoyable game. Now, one concept that the WoW game has that is very different from Magic, and I think the most innovative element, is the concept of the raid deck.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you get a special deck of cards that basically has a whole bunch of bad guys in it. And one player will play that. and it's sort of designed for multiplayer play. And then up to three, I think at least three mm-hmm. opponents will play against that one player mm-hmm. in that raid deck.
So it almost has kind of like a D&D feel. I mean, you know, you have one guy kind of playing the raid deck, and then you have this teamwork element that you really don't see in TCGs, CCGs.
Yeah.
What, how many ever CGs you want to call it?
Right. So I haven't had a chance to play the raid deck yet. I just read about it, and it sounds like a really interesting concept. I think I may... Don't shoot me here, but I think I may actually purchase a raid deck just so we can give that a go.
Hey, if you're purchasing it, go for it, buddy.
You'll play, right? Yeah. Okay.
We probably won't do well with our starter common uncommon deck against it.
Maybe not. But, well, then I'll play the raid deck and I'll feel good.
Yeah,
about
there
it.
You go. Whatever makes you happy.
So if you guys are interested in tradable card games at all, we definitely would recommend this one. I think it was a very big surprise for us. All right, well, so we played one other game mm-hmm. on our game
also
night.
A surprise to you.
Also a surprise. I don't even want to admit it. What did we play, Cody?
The Settlers of Catan.
Oh, my.
The classic.
And for those of you who have been listening to the show for a while, if you go back to our episode that's entitled A Very Special Game On, we talked about games that we hate and try to reconcile with them for the holiday season.
And failed.
And failed. The game that I listed as one of my least favorite is The Settlers of Catan.
The Philistine. It's a fun game.
We wanted to teach Single L how to play. He had never played, and he's kind of a newer gamer. And, you know, you gotta teach the classics.
Right.
So we pulled it out. I actually have a copy in shrink wrap that I had not opened, and it felt like it had to be in my collection. So we cracked it open and played it, and you know what? It was a lot of fun.
Good for you, buddy.
It's probably
and you won.
And I won, yeah. And a nail-biting victory.
Well, nail-biting between you and Loin. I was...
Right. You're having a bad couple of weeks.
It was bad. And I've been playing it on Xbox Live a lot more.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why I just got in this Catan kick. I've been playing, you know, a few times a week and been doing really well. And then it's like a... sit down with normal humans and I suddenly lose all ability at this game. So,
I'm not saying I'm going to revise it and say it's one of my favorite games, but I would definitely play it again.
I think
it was actually fun. And I think it highlights what I actually said in that episode, which it really matters what people you play with.
I agree.
You know, playing with Cody and Lloyd, you know, it made it a lot of fun because once I was in the lead, no one would trade with me.
Yeah.
and that was actually kind of fun. All right, well, so that's the games we've been playing. Now we're going to move on to some news around the Pulp Gamer Network. very nice.
That's good.
That's good, yeah. You know, we are a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network, and so we just want to take a real quick opportunity to tell you what's going on some of the other podcasts. We love that you listen to our show, and we really want to encourage you to listen to the other shows in the network and give them some love, too, because they're great shows.
This June from the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Out of Character talks about Tucson, the mini mecca of gaming goodness. Featured games include PS238, the role-playing game, Alpha Omega, the Catan Adventure Series, and Age of Conan. Game On with Cody and John. Renovate your games and find out the best games for five or more players. They'll also render judgment on whether to buy, try, or deny Cosmic Encounter and Space Alert. Myriad Games uncovers The Secrets of the Sea by Reiner Knizia, along with Age of Conan and Android from Fantasy Flight Games. The D6 Generation provide a comprehensive introduction to miniatures games, revisit Warhammer 40K 5th Edition, and then blast off to A Race for the Galaxy. Fear the Boot discusses changing character traits mid-game, what happens when your character fails, epic quests, and more. The Games Thing tries to play Age of Conan properly. Oh, and Ron will keep blathering on and on about Savage Worlds and how it's so awesome. Many of us will be at the Origins Game Fair June 24th through 28th. Come join us at the show or listen for our coverage right here on the Pulp Gamer Media Network.
PulpGamer.com.
All right, well, let's move on to gaming news. The first piece of gaming news we want to talk about is our new website.
Yes.
So for those of you who get the podcast from the website, hopefully you've noticed that we have a brand new site.
Nice.
And we hope that you like it. And if you happen to get your podcast from iTunes, go check out GameOnPodcast.com. We've worked real hard. Actually, my wife has worked very hard, and Cody as well, with all of the design stuff, to put together what we think is a really, really well...
A step up.
Yeah, a really well-produced website to hopefully give you guys a lot of great content, and in a way that's, you know, really visually appealing. So there you can find all of our episodes. We have streaming players for each episode, so you can listen to each episode individually. We've got we're going to have some gaming blogs and reviews that we're going to start putting up there. You'll notice a couple of them already there. We may even sort of start bringing in some collaborators to do some writing for us so that, you know, you can go to the website and not just get our show, but be able to get a lot of other content too.
And if you're interested in being a collaborator, by all means, send us an email at the Game On Inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
A little slow on the draw there.
Sorry, I was trying.
But that's the best way to reach us with any... anything.
Anything you got.
Yeah, I guess I'm slow too. Any grievances you may have.
Coupons. If you got coupons, send them to... So, check out our new website, and we really do appreciate all of you who are listening. We really feel like we've got some momentum going with this show, and we're excited about what's to come for Game On. So coming up in just, I guess, a week, less than a week from when this show is released, is Origins.
Thank goodness.
The great gaming convention in Columbus, Ohio.
The unofficial kind of first birthday of the show, if you think about it.
That's true. A lot of people don't know this, but Cody and I came up with the idea for putting out a podcast at Origins. As a matter of fact, on the drive home was when we came up with our rudimentary ideas for Buy, Try, Deny and some of the other segments. So. So it's kind of exciting for us to be able to go as podcasters now. And we're going to be a part of the, as we mentioned before, the Origins podcasting panel, which will be including a lot of folks, especially Pulp Gamer, a lot of Don Dem and Ron and Veronica Blessing and Dan from Myriad Games are all going to be on the panel with us, along with Stephen Conway from The Spiel and Tom Vassell from The Dice Tower. It's going to be a great time. We'd love for you guys to come out. It's at 11 o'clock on Friday if you're going to be at Origins. We'd like to
still sleep in and come. It'll be fine.
That's right. You know, if you had a 3 a.m. game of D&D finishing up, then, you know, sleep and come to the podcast.
Yeah.
Panel. Yeah.
But we want fans there. We want someone to say, hey, Cody and John, something.
You guys are... okay.
Even if it's bad, I just kind of want to be recognized at the panel, you know?
Exactly.
It's like, we are bringing Harry's Grand Slam baseball if it does get slow for us. So.
If it starts to slow down and we're not getting many questions.
We are still the common gamer.
That's right.
You just put microphones in front of us, that's fine.
That's right. So look forward to seeing you guys at Origins.
How might they recognize us at Origins?
Well, they very well might recognize us by our new stylish Game On with Cody and John bowling shirts.
Absolutely.
So Cody and I have invested in a little bit of apparel, if you will, and so you should be able to see us. We're hoping we'll get them in time.
We think we will.
We got a good friend who does some embroidery stuff. They can help us out, but should have the Game On logo on the back and then our names on the front in fine bowling shirt fashion. So if you see two guys in bowling shirts, that's probably us.
Nerds.
Or a couple of bowlers who are lost and just couldn't find
them. Bowling convention?
These games. All right, so we look forward to seeing you at Origins. Oh, and another thing to mention is that our next episode is going to be completely dedicated to Origins.
Oh, yeah.
Partially recorded there, and we'll include lots of content about the convention. So,
We're also recording the panel.
Yeah, so we'll have that content.
It's Game On property, baby.
We'll either have it...
We're schlepping the stuff there, all right?
We'll either have it as part of the Origins episode or maybe as a special episode that we'll release just of that panel. So that's anything else on Origins?
I'm ready for it.
All right, me too.
Yeah, we will be there. We'll be rolling in Thursday afternoon.
Thursday afternoon we'll get there, and we'll be leaving kind of late on Saturday night.
And we will be in the boardroom, and we want to play games with you, our listeners, or I guess the only people listening would be our listeners.
That's
right. So find us in the boardroom. Pull us aside, and we will definitely play a game, especially if it's Box of Golf.
That's right. Now, one game we would love to be able to play, but we don't think we'll be ready for Origins, segues into our new game news.
Oh, my.
Probably the most exciting news that we've come up with in the last few episodes, a new expansion for Battlestar Galactica.
I've bought it already.
I feel like I have too.
It's a buy.
That's right. Fantasy Flight has announced that they will be releasing a new expansion called Pegasus. And kind of the text that they bring here says, for nearly half a year following the destruction of the 12 colonies, the crew of the Battlestar Galactica defended the last remaining survivors. Then all at once, salvation appeared in the form of the Battlestar Pegasus. At nearly twice the size of Galactica, with upgraded weapons, batteries, and a newer, larger fleet of Vipers and Raptors, the fleet was now safer, or so they thought.
Dun, dun, that was a good episode.
Yeah, it was. So this fall, we'll bring the first expansion for Battlestar Galactica, the board game. The Pegasus expansion adds two new supplemental game boards featuring the Battlestar Pegasus and the planet of New Caprica. 7 new characters and a new Cylon locations overlay. So I guess it's going to go on top of the old board.
That's an overlay.
Thank you.
Good job.
And one thing that I'm very excited about, 2 plastic 3-dimensional base stars to replace those cardboard
nice.
Ones.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
very nice. Yeah. And we'll also include some new destination, crisis, loyalty, quorum, super crisis, and skill cards.
So I'm in.
Just adds to the whole game there. They're either even going to have a new kind of skill card called the treachery card.
Treachery.
I don't know if maybe the Cylons will have a little bit more.
There's
of
a new Cylon leader card.
Oh, that's
that
right.
I guess you
role.
Maybe play from the start.
Maybe so, yeah.
Maybe, because, I mean, it's a face-up character card, so
yeah,
it's a Brother Cavill.
So nice cheesy text here from Fantasy Flight. Pegasus will be FTL jumping
That's
into your...
That's faster than light for you non-nerds out there.
It will be FTL jumping into your friendly local game store this fall. Are you enjoying your juice box over there?
Sorry.
That's okay. We got juice boxes and crackers here. I feel like we're in preschool, but they're good.
Nom, tasty.
Anyway, so we're very excited about this. They said it's coming out in the fall. I'm really hoping that they'll have some copies available at
Gen Con. You got to think they will. I will stand in line for that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
We'll do our best to bring that to you and bring you a review of that just as soon as we get our hands on it. So
Woo.
Very exciting.
So say we all.
What do we got in RPG news? Throwing you the RPG bone.
I appreciate that. D&D 4th Edition has the new Player's Guide to Eberron out this month. If you remember, Eberron came out in, I want to say, 03-04. It was part of a open submission contest that Wizards of the Coast put out for people to submit their ideas for a new campaign setting. And Eberron is kind of this mix of pulp meets kind of intrigue and just swords and sorcery. It's this really neat world, and it has now been updated for 4th edition. Now, what's interesting is they're releasing the player's guide before the campaign guide. The difference being the player's guide kind of has all the crunch to it as far as rules go, and the campaign guide is more for DMs, you know, for locations and how to really make a good campaign for it. But it's kind of big news because you get to see a lot of the Eberron mechanics transferred over, and I think 4th edition is going to be a good fit. So that will be out by the time this episode is released, so go check it out.
Exciting. That might be a possible Origins purchase.
Maybe. Yeah, I might pick that one up.
Could be. All right, well, we'll just move on to some email. We had actually just want to mention one email that we got from listener Michael Hackinson, and he was wanted to chime in about our episode on renovations, about ways to enhance your game experience, and he mentioned something that I hadn't even thought about, but that he says he uses every time he plays a board game, and that's something as simple as a tablecloth.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said that he kind of uses that to, and he's trying to sort of convert his friends to this too, because he sort of hates the idea of all the dice clanking around the table.
Oh, yeah.
And he wanted to know if we used tablecloths or felt on our tables. And for me, no. And the main reason is because if I put a tablecloth on my table, my children will destroy it.
Right.
within like less than 2 hours, probably.
Yeah.
So I guess I could have one just for gaming. But I agree with him that it is good to sort of absorb the bounce of the dice.
It's kind of funny we mentioned that because... kind of on our wedding register, we have the, you know, the 5-foot round table that I've praised and lamented on the show, but it's made of a kind of hard plastic, so the dice and everything really just make lot of racket. And it's this kind of really light gray. It's just really bright and kind of striking. We actually registered for the wedding. I'll credit this to my fiance. We got like a table pad, a circular pad to kind of deaden it, and then a black tablecloth with those little clips so that when you're playing, you know, if someone gets up, they don't tug the table and then all of the Descent Dungeon with it.
Wow.
You know, so I think that might be pretty neat, and you know, maybe someone will come through for us on that, but
let me jot that down.
Exactly. I think the clips are like $1.
Oh, so, hey. Your wedding present.
Bachelor party. We're going shopping for clips.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Michael, for that suggestion. That's a really good one. I hadn't really even thought about that, but that's I think that's a real good addition to any game.
Sometimes it's the little things, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right, well, I think that just about wraps it up for the Game On inbox.
A beefy one.
It was kind of
a
beefy.
A husky one, if you will.
A bit husky, but still got lots of great content coming in the show. So let's get into our big deal entitled...
Battle Royale.
The Big Deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big. Well, in contrast to our duel episode, which was about games for two players... we had a suggestion from a friend of the podcast, Alan Stucker, and the Brood.
The Brood of Daughters.
That's right. Again, he has 4 teenage daughters. God rest his soul.
He's not dead.
Well, maybe not all the way. But Now, he suggested we do an episode on games that are great for five or more, and we couldn't agree more. So yep. We are going to throw some ideas out there. But first, there are certain challenges in gaming with large groups that maybe don't exist with two, three, or four players. You know, with five people, you've got, you know, it sounds stupid, but you've got five people. So you're
five opinions. It's like
the interest may become a lot more diverse. You know, you may not get five people that want to trade wood for sheep. It may be a lot harder to find a game for everyone to enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. With like a two player game, like when Cody and I get together, it's even hard with two players sometimes to decide what we want to play, but you get that many people together. And especially if you start getting a mix of gamers and non-gamers, mm-hmm. that ends up being a kind of a real challenge, because if you have a five or six player situation and, you know, you suggest Battlestar Galactica,
yeah.
All the gamers go, woohoo! And all of the gamer girlfriends and boyfriends and non-gamers go, can't we play Catchphrase, yeah. Or whatever? So, you know, not that there's anything wrong with either of those games, but when you have that kind of a mix and those diverse personalities, it becomes difficult. Sometimes just the space that you have to game in can be a consideration. I don't have a very large table for gaming in my house, and so if we were to have seven or eight or you know, huge chunk of people, and I wanted to get them involved in one game, that's going to be real difficult, I think. So, you know, sometimes if there's games that are available that don't require a table, mm-hmm. or that, you know, don't require a whole lot of board space, you know, those might be some good ones to select.
Right. And something else to consider, as we mentioned with, you know, the diverse interest, is time commitment, because you get more people in the mix. You know, with two people, you know, like, we can commit to playing Descent. You know, we'll say, we're going to play for 3 hours. But, you know, five or six people may not want to play for 3 or 4 hours, or they don't want to put that much time into any one game, no matter what it is. So,
especially if you start off by just saying, hey, let's have a game night, and they come over. With something like Descent, you have to say, hey, let's have a Descent night. And everybody knows up front that, you know, you're going to be playing for that long.
They're going to come in arguing and disagreeing with you.
Right.
Because it's a Descent.
Oh,
you see what I didn't know?
That was a fail.
Wordplay.
That was a fail.
Okay. So,
and so also in addition, we're talking about time. The downtime between turns in a game, I think, could be a real big thing too, because if you've got six players and player one plays their turn and then they've got to wait an hour before it gets back around to their turn, that can really turn some people off too. So games that have simultaneous action, or games that have very short turns, or where people can be involved during the entire game, I think those are going to be real prime choices. So, one other thing, kind of the last thing I want to mention, is the difference between cooperative and competitive games. There's been a great renaissance, if you will, of cooperative games lately.
Kind of the self-esteem movement, I guess.
You know?
Everyone's a winner.
Everyone's a winner.
Or a loser.
Or everyone's a loser, yeah. So when you get a big group of people together, that I think can be something that's attractive, is the idea of playing a cooperative game where everybody works together, where it's not so cutthroat. Making that choice between whether you want to do competitive or cooperative is something that you want to think about. Now, having said this, I think that in most gaming situations, if you have eight people come over to your house for a gaming thing, a lot of times you can just split that up into two tables.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that, but so we're just talking about situations where you don't want to do that. You know, let's say you do want to have everybody involved,
right.
And, or maybe it's a family thing and you want to get the whole family around the table. You know, Alan, who emailed us and told us, gave us this idea, that's a real key thing for him. It's for him to be able to sit with his four daughters and maybe even bring in some friends or whatever. And
or his wife.
Or his wife, yeah. and you know, put the whole family together for play. So that's what we want to kind of focus on.
That's what
kind of
neat about playing with him and the brood at HoosierCon was, you know, seeing a whole family that has obviously played, you know, BSG together. And it's just kind of neat, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of almost a dying breed now. A whole family is getting together and playing board games.
I would dare say heartwarming, actually. I mean, I thought that was
it's getting a little dusty in here.
I wasn't shedding a tear, but it was very, very cool to see Alan interacting with his daughters on that level. So it's very cool. All right, so, you know, there's some different categories of multiplayer games that we want to talk about. The first one is the obvious one, which is party games. Because mm-hmm. anytime you have a big group of people together, it's very likely in a party environment of some sort.
But you can still have a good party game without selling your soul to the Walmart brand.
Give us some examples of some really good party games.
My favorite is Say Anything. Mm-hmm. That's a great new one that's come out in the last year or so. That one, I've played that with gamers and non-gamers alike, and it's always a hit. I haven't played it with anyone who just hated it afterwards.
Yeah, that's a good one. And for those of you who don't know that one, it's basically a game where in sort of apples-to-apples fashion, you're asking a question, and people are writing down their answers, and then the person who is the judge, I guess, for that round who asks the question, he or she gets to select one of the questions, and you get points based upon whether you match that person or not.
It's a great social game. I think it'd be a really good icebreaker as well.
Yeah,
you get people talking, you kind of get little insights into people's personality, and it's pretty interesting.
I actually played that game, a demo game, with Dominic Crappyshed, who's the designer of the game. And I happen to know from a previous reading on Board Game Geek that he used to be an Alaskan fishing boat captain or something like that. Like, that was in a previous life there. And so he asked the question during the game of, in your opinion, what would be the best thing to collect? And so
I remember this.
People put everything from coins, stamps, you know, game books or whatever. And I put Alaskan fishing boats and just set that down. He read all of them. And when he got to mine, he looked at me like, and he said, "Do I know you?" So I looked a bit like a stalker, probably.
Yeah, kind of creepy.
Yeah, well, anyway, it was good for a laugh there.
Witness protection on.
Another game by that same company, North Star Games, that came out before Say Anything is Wits and Wagers. And this is a fantastic party game as well that sort of combines the idea of a trivia game and gambling.
a good combination.
And I always explain this as being a trivia game where you don't have to know the answer to still win.
Or a trivia game for people who hate trivia.
That's another good one too, yeah. And really, a lot of people hate trivia games. Yeah, so
I love them.
Yeah, Cody and I can play Trivia Pursuit for hours, but most people aren't going to be interested in that. So the nice thing about Wits and Wagers is that it is available in at mass market retailers now. You can find that at Target and some other stores like that.
And that's kind of an updated version. They, we both have the original version. They actually cleaned up a few of the mechanics, and most of the components are better. We do have the original version that has the nice, almost kind of mouse pad-y felt.
Yeah, the mouse pads sort of style matte.
Yeah, and that's one thing I'll keep, but I may pick up the new one just because kind of the new mechanics they did with it are pretty nice as far as betting goes.
And get some new markers.
Oh, yeah. You just buy 100 of them.
Yep.
Another good game, and this is one you'll really find more at conventions and probably less at home games, is Are You a Werewolf? Now, this has a couple different names. You may know it as Mafia. I've heard some other names for it, but those are the two, you know, Werewolf and Mafia, that come to mind.
Yeah.
And this one, I think you need a minimum of, I would say, like 11 to really play this game effectively.
Big group for this one to be any fun, really.
But if you're at a convention and you've never played it, even if you don't know what it is, go into it, because it is a great kind of social game where a couple people, the premise is a couple people are either playing werewolves or mafia members or some sort of malevolent force. And they are picking off people at random. The idea is you have your eyes closed, and then the mafia picks someone to kill. They kill them, and then it's kind of this mob mentality game where you're trying to weed out who it is. You've got the mafia, the werewolves, you know, sowing discord, or sometimes just being very quiet.
Yeah.
And doing
and,
that.
And the, I mean, the kind of the meta game is the game for this
exactly.
game, because it all becomes, well, you were the first person to talk, so you must be a werewolf.
Right.
Or, you haven't talked at all, so you must be the werewolf.
Best game of werewolf I played was... there were two werewolves, and it was Kaylin and I.
Yeah.
We were the two werewolves. So, you know, we just kind of had that look. Everyone accused me. No one thought it was her. And we got through the entire game. We didn't get caught. So.
Nice, yeah.
That's definitely one to play. Like I said, you'll see it more often at conventions, but definitely one to try out. It's almost a kind of a cult classic, if you will.
Yep. Another one that's for a pretty large group of people that is a newer version of the game, Cash and Guns. And Cash and Guns is the sort of interesting game that is supposed to simulate sort of a Mexican standoff, where you're in a warehouse and you've just committed some kind of large piece of organized crime, and now you're trying to divvy up the loot. And so everybody is given, and the game comes with foam guns.
You have to be very careful when you play this.
Yeah, we will not be playing this at the lunch table at my job. but, you know, and you'll point the gun at the person that you're with and to determine who dies and that kind of stuff. We won't go into the rules there. But there's also expansions for that game, like the Yakuza's expansion, which comes with, like, throwing stars, and they have, a shotgun and that kind of thing. So... But this version called Cash and Guns Live is a real compact version. It's basically just a deck of cards and a whistle. And you have one person who is called the Godfather, who is in charge of the game. And this game can be played anywhere. And they suggest that you play it with a large group of people, preferably in a public area where other people don't know that you're playing the game.
All right.
And so there's, like I said, there's no foam guns in this game. You're basically going to have cards that will, it's a team game. You'll have cards that will determine who you're going to be targeting and also what kind of weapon that you have. And so you're going to walk around, and you're given a certain amount of time to kind of walk around and spread out and decide who you're going to shoot. And then when the Godfather blows the whistle, you point your gun at that person. And if it's a gun, then it's like a pistol or something like that, then it's just going to be like you point your fingers, you make a gun shape. Or if you've got a shotgun, then you hold up like you're holding a shotgun. And there's all kinds of things. Like, they have grenades, and then they have rules for how you shoot somebody. So if you shoot someone with a shotgun, then they have to put both of their arms out to the side, and then they take a step backwards, like they get blown back with a shotgun. And then anybody that they touch with their arms also gets hit. And so things like, if you have a grenade, then the person who has the grenade card will take a hop in any direction, and then they'll hold their arms out and spin around in a circle, and anybody that they hit will get hit too. So it's a very interesting game, and it's still
be one to try once.
yeah. I mean, I'm tempted to pick it up, but I'm not sure how many times I would actually get a chance to play it. But there's some great YouTube videos online in Europe when the game was released in Europe first, of them playing this in like public squares, and it's pretty fun. Yeah. And so another game that's sort of in the party variety is another mass market game is Yahtzee Free For All,
which we've covered,
and you like that game, right?
Oh yeah, that was a fun game.
Yeah, well, that's another good one. It's sort of a variation on Yahtzee that's a little bit more competitive, I guess, right. And designed by
a lot more. It cuts down on the downtime. There's usually something you can be doing.
Right. Yeah. So those are some good ones that we would consider some of the best party style games mm-hmm. that you can play. But what about if you wanted to play non-party games? Like, you've had people over and you want to play more, I guess you'd call it gamer games. Mm-hmm. I've sort of divided these into two categories of games. Speaking to the concept of time commitment,
right?
Games that take under an hour or up to an hour, and then games that are far more than an hour. And so for in the under an hour category, I had Ink and Gold.
Oh, that's classic.
And this is a fantastic game of pushing your luck, exploring a cave, and you play with up to 8 players. I've played this with young kids and real diverse crowds of people. Everybody seems to like it because it feels like a game show.
Yeah,
and most people like game shows, and so that's another that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, and it's easy to teach. It's portable. It's not a big game. You can just throw that down the table, teach rules in 5 minutes, and then be shouting Ink and Gold.
There's the card game Bonanza. I know Cody's not a huge fan of this one.
I maybe need to play it more, but what I've played of it, it didn't really stick with me.
Have you played it in a big group, like 7 or 8 people?
No, I've played it maybe like 4 or 5.
Okay, yeah. I think that one's what benefits from a lot of people because it's a kind of a negotiation and trading game, and the more people that you have, the more fun that can be. So that's another good one that'll probably play in under an hour if everybody knows how to play. And then another great one that you can play with up to 10 players is Formula D, which is a simulation of a Formula One racing. And I may have mentioned it before, the guys from the Spiel podcast do a yearly Formula D tournament, and I think they had 16 or 17 people last year. I think they might even have more this year.
Wow.
I'll be going back to try to not win.
Get rid of your trophy.
Get rid of my last place hubcap. But this is one that just with one board you can play with up to 10 cars, and it's fun. Quick dice rolling.
I think the race mechanic really pulls people in, because even during a downtime you're still watching the board and you're wondering, oh, can I pull ahead? What do I need? I think you get a lot of interaction there.
Yeah, and you can look around the table and see what gear each person is in, so mm-hmm. you know how fast are they going to be able to move in their next turn. So. That one is terrific fun as well.
Now, on games that may take more than an hour in the quote-unquote gamer game variety.
that's a real broad topic or category.
Yeah, as we mentioned, Small World's a good one. That one goes up to 5, and we haven't played with 5, but I think you could probably do a game about an hour and a half, 2 hours-ish.
Probably an hour and a half knows how to play.
Yeah, and that's a good one. It's it looks a lot more complicated than it is. It's got a lot of chrome on it, a lot of cardboard, but at its core, it's really not that difficult of a game, and it's got kind of goofy stuff with it. It can be fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And when we played it this past weekend, we had a couple of people come and look at it, and they say, oh, man, this game must be really complicated, just because they were seeing the sheer amount of cardboard we were playing with. But No, it's pretty easy to mm-hmm. pull out. So even with a non-game a mix of gamers and non-gamers, I think you might be able to get this one to the table.
Definitely. Last Night on Earth's another good one. This one really oozes theme, and I really think people can get into it and really latch onto it.
Oh yeah.
And the idea of just the kind of teamwork thing, staying alive, and as I'll mention a little later, the idea of it's almost a cooperative / competitive game because you've got people cooperating, but who are also competing against another player. So
yeah, and I think this game, it plays with up to six because you can have four hero players mm-hmm. or whatever, and then two people splitting the zombie tasks up. But I think this one plays best with five.
I'd
when you've got one
that.
Person who's playing the zombie horde,
yep.
and then each person playing a different hero. But that one is good. That one's good, I think, if you like horror movies. I don't think you necessarily have to be a gamer or be, you know, so into horror you know, literature or anything like that. If you like B horror movies, I think you'd probably dig this game.
Yeah, it's a fun theme, and I think, like I said, I think people can latch onto it really easy, much like a zombie will mm-hmm. latch onto your pink flesh.
Right. Very nice.
Speaking of the undead, my personal pick for a game for five or more that's more than an hour would be Fury of Dracula.
Oh yeah,
one of my most favorite games. It's got a really good teamwork mechanic, but you have the Dracula player there, who usually is the more seasoned of the players, but doesn't have to be. There's just a really good back and forth, and when you get really deep into a game, when things are kind of starting to get to the end and the tension's high, I've not played a game that really feels like that. I mean, you get a good game of Fury of Dracula going. I mean, it's almost where people stop talking.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just kind of like, kind of working things out in their head. But a great game for five, and you can mix up who the four hunters are and who Dracula is and get that competitive and cooperative experience.
Definitely. One game that I really like with a lot of people is Power Grid.
If you want to lose friends.
Not on Cody's list.
if you're looking for a nap.
But this game will play with up to six. It's really great with five. It'll play nicely with six, too. Four, five, six, I think, is where you're going to get your sweet spot. But this game has so many great elements to it. A great economic game. There's a great auction element to it when you're trying to get your power plants. The point of this game is that you're trying to build a power network and get the light up the most cities with power using different resources that power generator or reactors and generators and that kind of thing. Power plants, that's what they're called.
don't look at me.
Okay, sorry. but this is a really good one. Very tense, and I think there's a tension that goes throughout the entire game where you really don't know who's going to win because it's almost got a race feel to it. But I've played this one with five or six players several times, and it's been some of the best game sessions that I've had. So
wow.
I will highly recommend that one.
Very good. And one other one that I've heard really only works good with seven is Diplomacy.
We're talking about losing friends.
Yeah. I've heard that is cause some irreparable rifts in friendships and family alike. So,
And we have not had the opportunity to play this game, so
no.
I don't want to give a recommendation necessarily on
sure.
something that we haven't played.
I would really like to play it.
Yeah, I do own a copy, and I just got it recently, and we're going to try to get the right group of people together. But I've heard so many stories about people taking the game really mm-hmm. seriously, and you know, this game is about negotiation and backstabbing, and I think that you know, you can get a lot of hurt feelings if people aren't mm-hmm. taking it with the right attitude.
Now, I don't know exactly how to take this, but my future father-in-law speaks very highly of the game.
Really?
So I don't know if he wants me to play and then to
crush your spirit,
crush my spirit or not, but you know, he speaks very highly of it, and he played it years and years ago, and it's something definitely, like you said, we get the right group of people, I'd like to give that one a try.
Yeah.
Also Twilight Imperium. I mean, it's not on our list.
That's true. We didn't put that on the main list,
yeah.
But if you're planning a very specific game day or game weekend for one game, that one plays, I think, with up to six. And
we need to have a contest where someone who really knows the rules, we fly them in and they teach us. And
oh, yeah.
From
yeah.
the game on budget. So hit that donation button.
That's right. You could win a trip to beautiful Indianapolis,
that's
Indiana.
Right. The gaming capital of the world.
One of these days. All right, so that's kind of some of the competitive style games that we would recommend for large groups. Now let's talk a little bit about cooperative games. What would you recommend in that realm?
I think Shadows Over Camelot's going to be your best bet. I know dear listeners are probably shouting Battlestar Galactica. We will get to it.
Uh-huh.
I think Shadows Over Camelot almost has the edge, though, as far as adaptability, because you can choose not to play with a traitor.
Right.
And I think that's huge. You know, if you want to play a game where it is truly cooperative, you know, maybe if it's more of a family thing or you just have that guy in your group that's going to get all pissy if you
yeah,
if
yeah.
you turn your back on him. It's It's a good game. It's easy to teach, and it has a more adaptable theme than BSG, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everyone knows King Arthur. Everyone knows Knights of the Round Table. Pretty simple to do.
Sure. And even it looks complex on the outside because there's lots of boards and cards and pieces, but the mechanics of it are pretty simple.
It's like, go to a station and do something.
Right.
You know, that's about what it is. Of course, Battlestar Galactica, I have to say, my cooperative game of choice.
Yeah.
The theme could be a turnoff for people. You know, if they don't like the show or even not even really a gamer, you know, you really have to coax them and say, hey, you don't really have to know a lot about the show to play, which you don't.
You don't, yeah.
That's one of the things that surprised me was I thought, well, they say that, but you're going to have some rudimentary knowledge. Not really.
No.
It really enhances, you know, you see the card, you're like, oh, I remember that episode when, you know, Baltar did that. But, you know, you could play and not know anything about the show other than the basic premise and be fine.
Yeah, you read the first paragraph in the rule book and it pretty much tells you what you need to know about the story of the game.
Yeah, and it's got some great tension, and I think you can get some really good gaming stories out of that one, to be honest.
Yeah. So that one's Shadows of Camelot's good for up to 7. You can do up to 6 of Battlestar Galactica. Two more that would fit into this category for large numbers. You know, we would put a game like Pandemic in, but at this point, it's only for up to 4. There's going to be an expansion that comes out later in the summer where you can add a 5th player, then it would probably jump into our list.
Right.
But Arkham Horror is one that plays with up to 8 players.
I don't disagree. It plays with up to 8. I don't know how well it plays up to 8.
You think? I've never played it with a
large group before. I've not played it with that. I mean, I've played it with 5, I think, before.
Oh.
And that was good.
Mm-hmm.
It was good with 5. But, I mean, it plays up to 8. I think that would really turn into a slog with a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
Personally.
Maybe 8 players who all really knew the rules really well.
Yeah, even then.
You think it still would be too slow?
I just think that's a lot.
Okay.
I think kind of the ceiling on that for me would be 6. But okay.
Well, it's definitely a game that is on the box, designed up to 8. So,
yep.
You know, that's a possibility.
But good with 5. Again, everyone knowing the rules, or at least everyone learning together and kind of having that first game, you know, feeling things out. It could be a good one. It's a lot of teamwork and kind of a sense of dread and panic, which is always good in cooperative games.
Yeah, yeah. I pretty much go into that game always thinking I'm going to lose, and I usually do. And then one last one that's a real recent import into the United States from the folks at Czech Games, Space Alert. And this is one that plays with up to 5 players. I think it probably plays best with 4 or 5.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, with fewer than 4, you have to do some special rules and in order to accommodate that, because you're always going to have at least 4 pawns on the board.
I think you lose a little bit of the spirit of the game doing that.
I think so, too. But that's another one that is really good as
a very unique one.
Very unique, yep. So that's a list of some cooperative and competitive games and party games that are great for large groups. So if you have a group of 5 or more, I think those are some that you could really kind of latch on to. Real briefly, we just want to talk about some listener feedback from you guys. We last episode put out the call to you, the listeners, to give us your opinion on what are some great multiplayer, you know, for 5 or more players games, and you guys met the challenge, and we really appreciate your feedback.
Thank you. Keep it coming.
That's right. So listener Michael Katz wrote us in and says that as for games for lots of players, it's hard to choose just one. He would say for complete non-gamers, apples to apples.
Always a hit. I've never seen where someone's like, I hate this game.
Yep. I took that to a like a youth convention, like a church youth convention, and we sat and played that for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah,
and I know, you know, but we had a great time in that setting. He says for quasi gamers, Great Dalmudi.
I can't believe I forgot this one.
Oh yeah,
Great Dalmudi is a lot of fun. It doesn't really have an ending.
Oh really?
Yeah. So
I've never played.
It's fun. I mean, you have to have a good. I think he even said, he said 7-8 are best, and I'd agree with that. It's this kind of wacky game where it really benefits from house rules to. I'm not going to go into the rules, but essentially there's the Great Dalmudi, which is the quote-unquote king, and then you have, like, the lowest of the low. And if you really do house rules for that, and I've played where, you know, the Great Dalmudi can order the lesser guy to go get him a drink, and he has to do it.
Oh,
and
really?
It gives you, yeah,
like
it gives
part
you,
of the game?
Yeah, it's part of the game. I mean, you can't do anything ridiculous, but, I mean, you can really get into it. I've played games where there's a hat for the Great Dalmudi. It's just,
oh, neat.
It's just this wacky game, and you just play till you get tired of it. There's no winner or loser, really.
I might have to pick that one up. We have to give it
it's
a try.
Fun.
That
it's
sounds
fun.
Interesting. And then he says that for hobby gamers, or the super rare occasions that he gets many people in, he plays Settlers. Carcassonne or Ticket to Ride.
Well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Yeah, and so those games have some rules for, I think, 5 players, and so those would definitely fit the category.
Settlers, you have to get an expansion. The 5 and 6
player
expansion. Player
expansion, yeah.
Which I also registered for.
Very nice. Did you register for any dishes or silverware or anything?
I let Kaylin take care of that.
Oh, okay.
Chill on with Cody and John.
You took care of the important
That's
stuff.
That's right. Yeah. Details, man. Details.
Okay. Dan from Myriad Games wrote us and said that his current favorite multiplayer game is Bang.
Of course, yeah.
Which easily supports 4 to 7 players. Yeah. We reviewed that recently on an episode of The Lunch Table. And yeah, that's a good one. That's definitely...
Dan is correct.
There. Dan is definitely
good
correct.
Job, yeah.
Thank you, Dan. And Justin Nordstrom also wrote in and said that he generally winds up playing party-style games in most of these cases. Things like Taboo, Say Anything, Wits and Wagers, that kind of thing. There's nothing wrong with party games, but if you're looking for a gamer game that supports 5+, he says he's got a few ideas. He says that he realizes that some games, even favorites of his, just aren't that good with more players. He said he bought the 5 to 6 player expansion for Pillars of the Earth and thought that it would be great, and now he's trading it away because he says it's actually more fun with smaller numbers.
I could see that.
I think that's true of several games we could.
That's a really good game, but I think getting too many. Too many players in on the fun would ruin it.
That's like Kingsburg with like 7 people. Yeah. You can't do that now, but if there was some expansion where you... Yeah. I don't think that'd be any fun. I said, second, I think the key here is limited downtime in games with loads of players. I like to have people doing something all the time, not just waiting 20 minutes for their turn. And we kind of touched on that a little bit earlier. And lastly, there can be problems with some players that are experienced gamers or know a game well and others aren't in that category. He says, assuming you've got 5 experienced gamers around the table, he says, I don't think you can do much better than Puerto Rico.
Oh, I think you can.
We think maybe you can. But he says, with 6 or 7 and a whole day spent gaming, he'd grab diplomacy in a heartbeat. And he says that Mystery of the Abbey plays with up to 8.
That's one I've wanted to try. That's a Days of Wonder game. Kind of an older Days of Wonder game.
Yeah, it's kind of a clue sort
of
thing.
Yeah, murder mystery sort
of
thing.
Murder
I
mystery.
Want to play that game.
Okay, I have to maybe pick that
it's
one
sound kind of whiny.
I want to play it. Okay, you can happen. And then one other piece of listener feedback from Jim Reed, who is a Darth Pilgrim on Board Game Geek.
Luke.
Actually, didn't get this one in the game on Inbox. I got it in my Board Game Geek mail box, and I think he starts off the email by saying, I guess this is good enough. So, and it is, Jim.
That's gameonInbox@gmail.com.
Yes, for next time. He says that with exactly 5, he's most likely to bring out Ticket to Ride, Jamaica, or Zulueta.
Jamaica's a good call.
That is a good one. He said, I would strongly recommend these 3 to someone looking for games with 5. Especially if it's a mixed gender group, he says. So
always the best kind.
Yeah. Possibly Kingsburg, if I know the players want to go a bit heavier. Once I go over 5, 6, 6 or 8 players, that's a range that usually sees Shadows Over Camelot and card games such as Killer Bunnies, Munchkin, things of that nature.
Killer Bunnies probably more than Munchkin. Munchkin, you got to have the right group and the jokes have to not be old at that point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, the 10th time you played Munchkin, you kind of been around the block.
Oh, yeah. Once you know all the cards, it's not quite as much fun anymore. But he finishes by saying that rarely does his game group want to split into 2 groups. So when his numbers get over 5, so we almost always bring out something like Say Anything, Wits and Wagers, Gift Trap, Apples to Apples, Portrayal, etc. So, you know, Say Anything, Wits and Wagers. That's two listeners there that have mentioned those, and we would recommend those too. Those are in the party game category. Those you can't really go wrong with those.
Absolutely.
So thanks so much to our listeners for sending us in that feedback. We really do appreciate you being a part of the show. We feel like it's great for us to sit up here and talk about things, but we really want you to participate because it's your show just as
much
as ours.
We are the podcast for you, the common gamer.
That's right. So let's just wrap this up by just saying, Cody, what would be your number 1 pick? If in answer to the question that we posed to the listeners, if you had a group of 5 or more people and you could bring out 1 game for everybody to play, what would you choose?
It may be a cop-out, but I'm going to say Anything. And I know it's not a quote-unquote gamer game, but it's guaranteed it will work with whatever group of 5 or more that you put out there, and it'd be a heck of a lot of fun and easy to teach.
That's good.
So what do you think?
I would go with... So I had to pick one. I would probably go with Ink and Gold.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Because everyone I play that with really, really likes it and has a great time with it. It's a short one, so that's another thing too. So those are some good ones, and I think this just about wraps up our discussion of multiplayer games. And so we hope that we've given you some great ideas for games that you can bring to your game table. All right, well, I guess it's time for us to get into our buy, try, or deny, where we'll take a look at Space Alert.
Oh, no! Buy, try, or deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple. All right, it is buy, try, or deny time, and we've got a very unique game coming up here. It's a new to us here in the States. It's gotten quite a lot of press because, like we said, it is a very unique game, and it is Space Alert. And the good folks at Rio Grande Games have brought it over here to the States. Don't give me that look. And we are going to tell you if it's something that you need to bring in or if it's just a lot of hype and maybe you should avoid it. So, John, with his ever-so-concise rules explanations.
Thanks, Cody.
Give it to us.
All right. So, Space Alert was designed by Vlada Schvatel, who was also the
I was going to name my son Vlada Schvatel.
Well, you still should. And he was the designer of the game Galaxy Trucker, which was a big hit this past year. It's for 1 to 5 players. They do say that they have some solo rules. I would not recommend it.
Nope.
But
as we said earlier, 4 or 5.
4 or 5 is the way to go with this. It's from Czech Games and released in the USA by Rio Grande Games.
Thank you.
In Space Alert, you and your fellow players are going to be taking on the role of space explorers. And during the game, your ship is going to be jumping to a distant location in outer space. The computer is going to collect some data for 10 minutes and then jump back to safety. But the moment that you arrive at this distant location, you're going to be bombarded with all kinds of threats and bad guys and internal threats and things like that. So your job is to work together to keep the ship from being destroyed for 10 minutes. And in this game, it's 10 minutes exactly. And that's what makes this game, I think, very innovative. So we'll go ahead and start off with a look at some of the components. The main game board in this is going to be a picture of a spaceship, which they call a sitting duck class space vessel.
The game has some good humor in it.
Very good humor, yep. And when we get talking about the rule book, you'll kind of get an idea of that too. The ship is divided up into 3 zones, a left, middle, and right zone, and they're color-coded, so it's blue, white, and red. And then the ship itself has 2 decks on it, an upper and a lower deck, which gives you a total of 6 areas on the ship, 3 upper and 3 lower. These are going to be the places that you can move around while you're on the ship. So you're going to get some player pawns to mark your guy on the board. There'll also be some different miniatures for battle bots and rockets. We'll talk about that in a second. And you're also going to get a player board for each player, and that's going to be the place where you're going to be laying out your action cards. You get a resolution track, some trajectory tracks. You're going to get a bunch of wooden cubes that are going to represent energy and also damage to the bad guys. You'll get a bunch of cardboard tokens. They're going to represent threats on the inside of the ship. They're going to mark damage on the ship and other things of that nature. So lots of cardboard. And then most uniquely, you're going to get 2 compact discs with this game. One is a tutorial disc and the other one is a mission disc. And this is the real key element to this game that makes it unlike anything I have ever played before. let's get into gameplay and you'll kind of get an idea of the flow for that. You're going to start off by assigning a captain. So one of the players is going to be the captain, which means they'll be the first one to play when you do the resolution round. You'll have a communications officer. This communications officer is going to be listening to the computer because these CDs will be playing during the game and will be giving you commands.
They don't stop.
No, and it represents the computer's voice.
Unless you press stop.
You could possibly press stop if you had to go to the restroom or something. You have a security officer who's going to be monitoring internal threats within the ship. And so the game is divided into 2 separate sections, the action or planning phase and then the resolution phase. The idea here is that you're going to be in a 10 minute block of time. All these threats are going to be coming to your ship and they're going to be coming at certain times. And then you're going to have to move your guys around and coordinate so that you keep the shields running and you keep the weapons firing. And you keep everything deployed at the proper moment.
Screensaver off.
You keep the screensaver. You jiggle the mouse on the computer so that the screensaver doesn't activate. So you have to be doing all these things at exactly the right time in order to combat things. So you spend the 10 minutes of the computer time, which you're listening to on the CD, planning out all of your steps. And then once that 10 minutes is over, you're done, basically. And then you have a resolution step where you get to see how well your planning worked out for you. And at that point, you'll get to see whether you were able to keep the ship safe or not. if you've ever played the game Robo Rally, this game has a lot of similarities to it in the play of cards. In Robo Rally, you're playing a little robot that's moving around a board trying to get to certain objectives, and it's planned movement. You lay out cards ahead of time, and that programs where your little robot is going to go. And of course, all the other robots are doing the same thing, so they might kind of bump into each other. In this game, it's sort of the same way. You're planning out using these action cards where you're going to move and what you're going to do. At the same time, all of the other players around the table are doing the same thing, and you have to coordinate your movement and your actions so that things happen at exactly the right point so that you're able to battle these threats. So there's in the action phase, there's basically three kinds of things you can do. You can either move left, right, or if you move up and down, you use what's called a gravel lift, which is like an elevator. You can fire weapons. This is called an A action. And there's different kinds of weapons depending on what part of the ship you're in. Then there's also an energy action, because all of these things, the shields and the weapons, they all require energy. And so by you doing the energy action, you can send power to the shields, or you can draw power to the external reactors from the center reactor. Or if you're in the center reactor area, you can recharge that center reactor with some fuel cells. So that, you know, that's sort of the flow of what you're going to be wanting to do. In addition, there's also some what they call C actions, which are depending on where you are in the ship. So like Cody mentioned, in the communications room, like the main bridge, once per phase of the game, you have to go and basically perform the C action, which is the equivalent of jiggling the mouse so that the screensaver on the ship doesn't activate.
That was a nice touch.
And then that would cause all of everyone's actions to be delayed. So that's kind of
flying toaster.
That's kind of a funny After Dark, yeah. And then you also have things like battle bots that can be deployed. These are robots that will follow you around the ship, and if there are any internal threats, the subversive saboteurs and stuff that have come onto the ship, then you can tell the battle bots to attack those sort of things. So lots of different things you can do, and it's all going to be kind of guided by what you hear on the CD. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to play a couple of little examples of what you're going to hear from the computer on the CD. This is directly from the CD that comes with the game. So, you know, you're going to basically set everything up, and then you're going to start the CD, and it'll tell you that you're jumping into hyperspace and that phase one will begin. And that means that you can lay down your cards for the first three turns. You can just get a certain number of cards for phase one and a certain number of cards for phase two and also for phase three. And you have to work on it one piece at a time. Start off with phase one, and then when the computer tells you, you'll move on to phase two and phase three. That's all you're going to be doing during this planning phase is laying down these cards. It's all just program movement of what you're going to be doing. But the computer might say that there's a threat that's coming at a particular time, and that would sound like this.
Time T plus 1, threat, zone blue, repeat, time T plus 1, threat, zone blue.
So what it's saying there is that at that particular time code, you're going to place that threat on the board and it'll be a certain distance away from the ship. As the game progresses, that ship will move closer and closer and also attack you, depending on how things work out with the trajectories. There's lots of other things that can happen. There's a thing called the data transfer where you can trade cards, and that sounds like this.
Data transfer. Repeat. Data transfer in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Data transfer complete.
And then one element that I think is a lot of fun is sometime during a planning phase, your communications might go down. Like, you know, you all have headsets or something and they stop working and have a malfunction. And in that case, you'll hear this.
Communication system down.
And during the time when all of that static is happening, you're not allowed to talk. So that limits your you to just being real quiet and planning out your turn, or, you know, motioning or whatever, but you're not allowed to talk during that time. So that's really kind of fun, I think. So once the action and planning phase is done, then you're going to move on to the resolution phase to see how you've done. And there's a resolution track, like a board, and you basically go methodically down the track, and do the things in order that it says to do. And it all kind of, you can see it ahead of time, so you know exactly what's going to happen in what order. And then you basically see how well you did. See if the ship attacked you and if you were able to hit it with the lasers. And the main goal here is that you want to stay alive, and that means that each zone of the ship has 6 hit points, I guess you would say. And so once an area of the ship takes more than 6 damage, then you lose the game. And that's really the only way that you can lose the game. Which is nice because it's really hard to coordinate all this stuff. Mm. And so
you're going to take some damage.
You will take some damage. And so you're just trying to minimize it and just scramble around and do the best you can. And it's actually kind of fun to see how well you were able to plan things out. One thing that I do want to mention, and as we kind of transition into our review of this game, is the rule book. I've read a lot of rule books, and as you know on this podcast, I'm the guy who gives the long rambling rules or explanation.
It's what you do, baby.
It is.
I like it.
I've read a lot of rule books. This is quite possibly the best written rule book that I've ever seen for a game. There's a lot of complexity built into this game, even though it's a very short amount of time. The whole game plays 10 minutes plus however long it takes you to do that resolution round, so maybe 20 minutes for the whole game. But since there's so much complexity to it, the game does a great job in the rule book of teaching you how to do it. So you have this tutorial CD that has a couple of test runs and then some simulated runs, and in each run it adds a certain element to it. You might only start off with a couple of actions, and then it adds one more thing and then one more thing until you're ready to do the full missions. And the way it's laid out in the rule book is just brilliant. And my favorite part about the rule book is that if you turn it over to the very back of the rules, it gives you more or less a guide on how to teach the game. Like if you know how to play and you're teaching it to new players, it gives you an outline of what you should be telling them and what you should be doing while you're explaining
what
certain
cards
things.
To show them.
What cards to show them? Yeah, like I have a real problem sometimes if I want to give an example of something that happens during the game. I never know which card to pull out. They even tell you which card to pull out to use as an example. So very, very well written. Yep. So anyway, I've just been as always rambling on here. Cody, why don't you tell me what you think about Space Alert?
Well, one thing I want to throw in with the components is with the CDs that come with it, both the tutorial that have 2 test runs and 3 simulations, and then the main CD that has 8 missions, is you can download these MP3s for free. Is that correct?
That's how I got these tracks that we just listened to.
Yeah, so in these days of smartphones and MP3 players, it makes it a lot more portable. You just get a set of those little speakers, or even some iPods kind of have small external speakers that might work for this. Mm-hmm. It allows a little more flexibility to play wherever you want. I mean, because that's such a big part of the game. You can play without it, but I don't think it would be as fun.
Yeah, if you weren't going to use the speakers, you have these cards that have the time code for each of these different things. And so you would need a separate person, basically, to be sitting there, not playing the game,
yeah.
And then at those particular times with a stopwatch or whatever, reading that part of the card. So, it's good to have that in there.
Right.
It's a lot more fun with the CD.
All right, but as far as the actual game goes, I really enjoyed it. It was, like I said, I like just the little bits of humor they put in, like the sitting duck class ship and the... I thought the jiggling the mouse to delay the screensaver, I thought that was pretty funny. It's a really fun game, and like John said, once you have the rules down, I mean, you can play a game of this in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just real quick. There's really no other game like it because it's so dependent on the audio, and there's just such a teamwork factor in listening and working together. It's a very unique game. I enjoyed it, and it's one of those games where I don't know if you're going to see another one like it for a while.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this kind of a mechanic with the CD can be implemented this well again, too soon,
Right.
But yeah, it's I agree. I think it's very innovative.
Wow.
The mechanics are really neat. I compared this to Robo Rally. I'm not a huge fan of Robo Rally, but for some reason this game really rang with me a lot better. Maybe because of the cooperative element, because you can coordinate and say, well, I'm going to shoot the gun here at turn 3. Why don't you meet me at the other,
It gets really exciting once you get down to the end of the CD playing, and you're trying to organize all these things. You got a couple threats on the board. You're like, okay, have we taken care of that? Will we do enough damage to do that? You're scrambling around trying to get enough energy going. And
yeah.
It really gets kind of tense. And I really like those situations in games where it kind of gets this visceral reaction out of you where you're on edge and you're trying to work it out. It really gets you into it. I like that sort of thing.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't mention is that when you're playing the action cards, you're allowed to move the pieces around the board. So the little energy cubes and the little pawns and those kind of things, you can move all those around as you're planning your step. And then when you get to the resolution phase, you'll just reset those before you go through the mm-hmm. resolution. So that makes it real nice to have those physical pieces to be able to move around.
And you may think with the physical pieces it would make the game too easy because you can see. Not the case, because we did it. We thought we had things figured out, even moving the plastic around. And we found, you know, when we played, we sometimes got some things really wrong. And
right.
We didn't plan the way we should have. But
yeah. Now, if there's anything that I could say about the game in a negative fashion, which isn't much, we mentioned that the game is good for 4 or 5 players. That's where it really shines. You're always going to have at least 4 pawns on the board, 4 people running around. If you have a 5th, then one interesting mechanic is that the computer voice may from time to time say that you have an unconfirmed threat. If you're playing a 5-player game, then those unconfirmed threats are actual threats, and you'll put them on the board. If you're playing with 4 players or fewer, then you ignore those unconfirmed threats. And so it just adds additional element
cool.
of...
it's not too intrusive.
Yeah, you know, and that way you get more bad guys when you have more people there. If you play with... Well, you can play with 1, I guess. 1, 2, or 3 players. Then you have to do a little bit of a
doubling up in a way.
Yeah, I guess
you have to play multiple roles.
Yeah, almost like a dead hand mechanic where any player boards that are empty, like if you're in a 3-player game, you'll have 1 player board that's not being used. That player board becomes an android that you are in control of. So you're going to get a different number of cards for your phases, and each player can play on that android and make the android go and do whatever they want. So you can coordinate that, but if you're in a 2-player game, then you have 2 androids you have to coordinate in addition to your own stuff, and I think it makes it a little bit of a brain burner in that short period of time.
I generally just don't like dead hand mechanics. I've never seen it really done well.
Yeah.
So.
So that's, if there's only one knock on the game, it'd be that, you know, in order to play it the best, you would really need 4 or 5 players, I think. But that's Space Alert, and I think that's a pretty good one. Cody, buy, try, or deny, Space Alert.
That was very hasty. Buy, try, or deny,
Space Alert.
Space Alert,
buy, try, or deny.
I have a new category. I will give it a try. I will give it the urgent try.
The urgent try.
Because this game is not for everyone. I really liked it. I know you really liked it. Some people may hate it, whether it's for the CD mechanic or... just the amount of like stress and teamwork you have to have. Some people may be really turned off of it, but I think it's one of those, it's so unique and just so different and fresh. I think you need to try it. You need to try it soon. Find a way you can play it at a convention or some other friendly local gaming store event, because it's really something to play, but you may not like it. It's one of those where I think it's going to be really polarizing. I don't think you're going to find many people who be like, oh, it's okay. I think you're really going to like it, or you're like, eh, that game's just a lot of hype.
Yeah.
So I would give it the urgent try.
Oh, very nice.
The UT, as it were.
Oh, hey, I like that. Yeah,
yeah, I bet you do. So I'll throw it back to you. Space Alert, buy, try, or deny.
Boy, this is actually really kind of tough. I as a collector... I think that I have to say that this is a buy, and that's because I guess I like to have in my collection a lot of innovative games. You know, and we've talked before about the Jones theory, having one game of each particular type or genre.
My failing theory, yes,
it's a good theory, and so I love having this one in my collection because there is no other game like it. I could find 15 games about trading in the Mediterranean and put them in my collection if I wanted to, but I'm not going to find another Space Alert.
Yep.
And the game is a lot of fun. I think Cody's right. I don't think this is for everybody. And I think that the pressure mechanic is going to drive some people nuts. That not only, you know, the people who don't like to feel like they're under pressure or that they're having to do something in a rush, any game that has a sand timer or a timer in it, if they don't like that, they're definitely not going to like this.
Freak out.
Yeah. Just having that 10-minute time limit and just constant input from the computer voice, it makes it a little bit on the stressful side. But it's just so well produced. Like I said, those, you know, I'd buy it just for the rule book.
Yeah.
it's just that
nerd.
I'm gonna definitely give it a buy, with the caveat that of what Cody says there, that it's not for everybody. But if you're a gamer, I think you need to have this one.
All right, so that's a try for me and a buy for John. All right, well, I think that wraps up buy, try, or deny for Space Alert. Definitely unique, if nothing else.
Spacey.
Spacey. What do you say we close out the show?
All right, that sounds great. Let's do it.
Operation ends in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mission complete. Jumping to hyperspace.
All right, well, thanks for listening to episode 22 of Game On with Cody and John. We want to just remind you of a few things before we go. The first thing we want to talk to you about is iTunes reviews. If you get this show via iTunes, we really would love for you to go and leave us a positive review.
Be honest if you hate us.
Honest, yeah. but the reviews really help us. We want to kind of bump up our rating on iTunes. We want to get the word out to more listeners, and we're really gaining some momentum. We're feeling real good about it right now.
Absolutely. So
we want to keep that up. So if you have the time, we really, really appreciate your iTunes review. We'd like to also mention that we are a part of the Pulp Gamer Network, and so lots of other great podcasts at pulpgamer.com. Be sure to check us out.
All right, and if you'd like to get in touch with us for any gaming news, questions, or just a chat, you can do that at gameoninbox@gmail.com, and that's the best way to reach us. You can also reach us through our newly updated website at gameonpodcast.com. Be sure to check that out for all of the old episodes and coming up some gaming blogs and other gaming information.
That's right. And if you want to interact with us on an internet's capacity, I guess.
Nice.
We were thinking about eventually putting some forums directly onto GameOnPodcast.com. In the meantime, we do have a very active guild on BoardGameGeek.com and guild number 576 if you want to search for guilds, and we're under like the podcast section. But there we've got forums, we've got an image gallery, and a great way for you to interact with other listeners of the show. So we'd invite you to go there.
Right. And if you're on Twitter, you can find us under GameOnPodcast, all one word. And if you need your game on fixed during the week, well, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, you'll also even notice that our Twitter feed is listed on the website directly. So on the kind of the right side of the screen there, you'll see a scrolling feed of our Twitter. So I guess that's all we got for this episode.
We need to get packing for Origins.
Time to get our stuff together for Origins. Off to Columbus for us.
And if you're going to be there and you see us, by all means, if you don't come and say hi to us, then we won't know, but
but we'd really like for you to come.
We'll
and say
be angry. So yeah. Look for the blue bowling shirts, and we will see you at Origins. And until then,
game on.
The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at Game On Podcast. That's not the address. That's not it.
There's your blooper.
What are we doing?
The game show.
The game show. Corey and Jim.